It's good to be here with you today. I'm thankful that your pastor has invited me to share the Word of God with you this morning. Let me just say this. I think you all made a very wise choice when you called Rory and Gigi. You really did. They are just a breath of fresh air. I enjoy being around them. Rory has become a part of our peer group that meets monthly, and we share together, and he's so insightful, and his spirit is so warm, and I'm just so thankful that you have called him to lead your church, and I think you've made a very good choice. And I like already what I'm seeing. I like what you've done with your entry area. That's so warm and inviting, and it just makes you feel very welcome when you walk in. It's good to be with you. The serenity of that early morning quiet was abruptly broken with the words, "Fire! Fire!" Within minutes, every available resident of Menlo Park joined the frantic effort to save that well-known building. Still, despite their best efforts, the building quickly became little more than smoldering ashes and drifting soot. The famous building was an old inventor's laboratory. Perhaps you've heard of him, Thomas Alva Edison, the inventor of the electric light bulb and a host of other world-changing innovations. In the light of dawn, Edison and his son Charles surveyed the damage. Nothing was left. Nothing was salvageable. All his inventions, his notes, and his journals were completely destroyed. As Edison kicked through the ashes, he looked at his son and said the strangest thing. He said, "You know, there's great value in this disaster, my boy. For now, all our mistakes are burned up. Thank God we can start anew." You know, is it any wonder that this inventor, Thomas Edison, was such a successful person? He was successful because he was able to take one of the most troubling situations of his life and to see it as an asset. What do you do when affliction comes your way? Do you turn life's adversities into assets, or do you let the adversities control your life? One thing is certain. From the cradle to the grave, all of us are going to face hard times. Hard times come to us all, but I think we need to remember, adversity doesn't need to restrict our success. To the contrary, some of the most successful people in the world were people who've ridden to success atop the steed of adversity. Today's text speaks of one such person. He's an Old Testament character named Joseph. And though he faced more than his share of adversity, Joseph found a way to take his adversities and turn them into something positive. Now, before I read the text, I think it's important for us to reflect just a little bit on Joseph's history. If you remember, Joseph was born one of 12 brothers. Even as a child, his family realized that he was different. Joseph was always a dreamer and would share his great dreams with his father and his mother and his brothers. But his brothers became jealous, didn't like to hear about Joseph's dreams. And so they determined they would kill him. They threw him in a pit and wanted to tell his father that he had been eaten by wild animals. But instead, a caravan was coming by of slaves. So they decided, why not make some money off of him? Instead of killing, let's sell him as a slave. And so they did. So Joseph went away from home to be sold as a slave. Finally, he was sold to a man named Potiphar, who was an official in the Egyptian hierarchy. Unfortunately, Potiphar's wife kind of liked Joseph, and she made an attempt to seduce him. Well, being a godly man, Joseph turned her down, and instead, when she was turned down, she went and said that Joseph tried to seduce her, and he was thrown in jail. Spent a decade or more in jail, but while in prison, was such a good prisoner that he finally became in charge of all the prison operations. After a decade or so, Pharaoh had a dream that no one could interpret. So Joseph was brought up from prison to Pharaoh's court to interpret his dream, because several had said, "This man Joseph is able to interpret dreams." And so Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dream. And his interpretation was so wise that Pharaoh put him second in charge of all of Egypt. Now, with that background, I want us to read our text today, which is Genesis 41, 50 through 52. The text says, "Now before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, 'God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household.' He named the second Ephraim, for he said, 'God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction.'" I think it's so interesting to hear what Joseph named his sons. Joseph, who had gone through all these afflictions and all these trials, Joseph, who had been turned on by his own family, finally comes to the point where his dreams come true and he's second in command of all of Egypt. And so when his children are born, he names them names that really trace out God's work in his life. The first one is named Manasseh, a name that means, "Now I can forget all my troubles." The second is named Ephraim, which means becoming fruitful in the land of one's afflictions. It is that second name that I want us to use as our focus this morning. Joseph's second son, who was named Ephraim, a name meaning "God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction." Ephraim. Isn't that what we all want? Don't we all wish for the ability to become fruitful even in the midst of our affliction? That's what happened to Joseph. And this morning, quickly, I want us to see how he was able to continue his life until Ephraim came, until God made him fruitful in the land of his affliction. I think the first thing we see is this. In order for our Ephraim to come, we need to keep on dreaming until Ephraim comes. We need to keep on dreaming until Ephraim comes. Joseph began his life motivated by dreams of greatness. He dreamed that one day God would use him to be a great world leader. And though he faced affliction after affliction, trial after trial, trouble after trouble, Joseph never quit dreaming. He never quit dreaming, even though when he was thrown in the pit in the desert of Palestine, he never quit dreaming, even then when he was sold as a slave by his brothers. He never quit dreaming, even when he was falsely accused of a crime against Potiphar's wife that forced him to spend a decade or more in prison. Even though all these terrible things came to Joseph, Joseph never gave up his dreams. He kept on dreaming until Ephraim came. When we read Genesis 42, 8 through 9, we hear Joseph, who is now second in command of all Israel, talk about his dreams. The passage states, "But Joseph recognized his brother, although they did not recognize him. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed." Yes, Joseph kept on dreaming, even in his afflictions, until God made him fruitful in the land of his affliction. Jim Borden was a dreamer. Borden was a young man whose dream was to break the track record for the 2-mile event for New York State University. Unfortunately, as a freshman, Borden was diagnosed with an unusual disease called ichthyosis. Ichthyosis is a disease that forms scales over the body's sweat glands, making it impossible for the body to perspire. When the diagnosis came, the team doctor immediately disqualified Borden from competition, knowing that if Borden could not produce perspiration, he would overheat in any kind of exertion. But Jim Borden had a dream. And when a person has a dream, that dream finds a way. After several days of thinking and planning with his other teammates, Borden and his friends came up with a way to overcome Jim's problem. During the track meet, Jim's friends stationed themselves along the route with buckets of water. And when Jim would run by, they would douse him with the water so that the water would evaporate and allow his body to cool. And finally, in his senior year, with the help of the Bucket Brigade, Borden achieved his dream, setting a new school record for the 2-mile run. You know, when a person hangs on to their dreams, even in those days of hardship, that dream seems to find a way. We have to keep on dreaming until our Ephraim comes. But there's a second thing we find in this text that we see in Joseph's life that kept him focused towards success until his Ephraim came. He not only kept on dreaming, he kept on believing until Ephraim came. You know, belief is the easiest to maintain when things are going well. Belief is the easiest to maintain when life deals us the cards we want. But sometimes when adversity comes to us, it's hard to keep on believing. Surely Joseph's faith must have been tested during those difficult years. But despite being a slave, despite being in jail for a crime he didn't commit, despite all the things that happened to Joseph, Joseph never stopped believing. In Genesis 41, 15 through 16, as Joseph is now in front of Pharaoh to interpret his dream, listen to what the text says. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I have a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not in me, it is in God, who will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." Obviously, these words were not the words of a man who had given up his faith, but these were the words of a man who kept on believing, even in the land of affliction. We too can survive our afflictions. We too can make it until our Ephraim comes if we keep on holding to our faith, if we keep on believing until Ephraim comes. I like what the poet says. When doubt sees the obstacles, faith sees the way. When doubt sees the darkest night, faith sees the day. When doubt dreads to take a step, faith soars on high. When doubt questions who believes, faith answers, I. So how do we survive until our Ephraim comes? Like Joseph, we keep on dreaming. We keep on believing until our Ephraim comes. But last of all, looking at Joseph's life, I think we gain a third clue, and it's this. We keep on working until our Ephraim comes. I think it's interesting to note that Joseph excelled no matter where he was. Joseph excelled even as a slave. to the point where he was put in charge of all of Potiphar's household. Then he was placed in prison. And he was such a good prisoner that he was placed in charge of all the prison affairs. And finally, after doing his best, after working his best in the times of his affliction, he finally was able to realize his dreams. I think it's important to notice that Joseph didn't wait until his dream came true to give his best effort. Joseph gave his best effort at every part of life. He kept on working, even in the land of his affliction. He kept on working until his Ephraim came. After school each day, young James went to the butcher shop to assist the butcher in his day's work. James was a hardworking boy, and upon graduation, the butcher hired him full time, and James continued to do good work. And finally, the butcher told him, he said, "If you continue like this, I will let you become part owner of this butcher shop, and eventually, when I'm dead and gone, you can be the owner." And so James worked as hard as he could to fulfill the dream of having his own business. A little later in his career, James began to notice that the butcher had become greedy. And instead of dealing with people fairly, he began to substitute high-quality meats for a lesser cut without telling his customers. Finally, James confronted him with it and told him he didn't think it was right. And on the spot, the butcher fired him, sent him on his way. It looked like James's dreams had gone down the drain. No longer could he dream of owning the butcher shop. No longer could he dream of having this business for himself. Instead, the only thing he could find was a job where he was a stock boy in a neighborhood department store. The hours were long and the pay was considerably less. But still, James, as a stock boy, did the best he could do. Within months, he was moved from stock boy to cashier. Within a year, he became assistant manager and then manager of the department store. Finally, James was able to save enough money and to buy the department store. But the store excelled so much that soon he had a chain of department stores. And today, his department stores bear his name all over the world. Yes, this young man kept on working regardless of his adversities. Yes, James Cash Penny, or as you may know, J.C. Penny, kept on working until his Ephraim came. So what do we do until our Ephraim comes? We keep on dreaming until our Ephraim comes. We keep on believing until our Ephraim comes. And we keep on working until our Ephraim comes. And if we do, eventually God will make us fruitful in the land of our affliction. I think that's why God is often referred to as the great Redeemer. The Redeemer is someone who takes something and cashes it out for something different. And that's the way God does. He takes our afflictions and redeems them to make them the stuff of which dreams are made. Perhaps that's why William Williams, that great 18th century hymn writer, penned these words: "Guide me, O thou great Redeemer, pilgrim in my barren land. I am weak, but thou art mighty. Hold me with thy powerful hand. Bread of heaven, bread of heaven, feed me till I want want to know more. Feed me till I want no more. Ephraim, faithful in the land of our affliction. Ephraim, feed me till I want no more. May you, like Joseph, keep on dreaming, keep on believing, and keep on working until Ephraim comes.